Good morning, everyone. It's April 19th, 2022, and 9:32 in the morning, and we're starting the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee. We have three items on the agenda. So, Rafael, if you would just let everybody know how they could call in or participate remotely.
Sure. Good morning. So to participate or provide comment virtually during this Finance Committee meeting, the public may join the meeting by visiting the Zoom app on their smart device or on the web at https://zoom.us, and the webinar ID is 86360595462. That's 86360595462. You may also call in by phone at 888-475-4499.
Thank you, Rafael. So we're going to start first with item one, the Miami Beach Senior High School PTSA request for funding in the amount of $25,000. We heard this at our last meeting, and we continued it until today so that we would have an opportunity for someone to go back to the school board and ask for their participation. Someone from staff, I don't know if Leslie is here, but it looks to me like the school board is offering up $12,500. I think that was you, Commissioner Samuelin, who said, let's go see if we can get some money from them.
Yeah, I think it was a team effort, Mr. Chair, and I think that's great news. With that, I'm happy to move the item.
Okay, I'm going to second the item. So show the Dolphins will be participating at $25,000. The school board will be doing $12,500, and ours will be a match to their $12,500. And if you'll show that, John Dunn, without exception. Okay. Do you have everything you need, John?
Yes.
Okay. Next, we're going to call up item number three, which is the discussion of a proposed parking garage, mixed-use official retail. We had this one at the last meeting, and we continued it so that the parties could do some more work. So let's first hear from the staff. I don't know who from staff here is going to talk about that. Is there someone here from city staff that is going to...
Ozzy, are you going to come up?
Mr. Chair, which are you on the Lincoln Road item or the 13th and Collins item?
13th and Collins.
So that would be item four, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Item
four. You said three.
I'm sorry. Okay. So item four. I apologize. So, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Ozzy Dominguez, Division Director of Asset Management for the City of Miami Beach. We met on this item a few weeks ago, and we were asked to come back and ask LV, who is the interested proposer here, to revise their financials and provide a couple of different scenarios on eliminating some parking space and adding some office space. They've done their due diligence on that and presented some different scenarios to us, so we'd like to ask them to come on up. And I think they have a PowerPoint presentation.
PJ, could you pull up the PowerPoint? Thank you. Okay, good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee member, staff, Michael Larkin, Turner South Biscayne Boulevard, here representing the applicant. Next slide, please. Just to refresh your recollection, situate the southwest corner of Collins and 13th in the heart of what is now the Arts and Culture District. Next slide. This is a better rendering that was not included the first time around. It more clearly shows off a Class A office, which I think is pretty impressive, more the skin of the garage, and shows the easy access from the street. Next slide, please. So just to reiterate, we're seeking an unsolicited bid. We're asking for a waiver of competitive bidding, a height waiver to achieve 75 feet in height, and the only clawback provision is a reservation of 60 spaces that we'll pay market value for when the garage is fully constructed and turned back over to the city. Next slide. There was a little bit of, maybe I didn't do a best job of explaining what unsolicited bid is. We have to submit certain required materials. If you all would accept that and waive competitive bidding, then you all have a window of time that you say between 21 days and 6 months where you accept all sorts of bids from any type of competitor for the same property. Once that window closes, then you all and the city manager and the city administration, Alina, John, would sit there and evaluate what is the best bid that came in. And whatever you feel is in the best interest of the city, that's the bid you select. So it's like a lightning speed RFP process, but just condensed in a much shorter period of time, which I think is more effective and better for the city. Next slide. So there were different issues that were raised the last committee meeting. One was community outreach, earlier revenue flow to the city, additional office space, and evening operation means can we release some of the 60 spaces at night after 5 or 6 p.m.? Next slide, please. So we did reach out to the Ocean Drive Association. They were generally supportive, but David Wallach from Mangoes, for example, was saying, well, we just want parking. We don't want office use. So they just want, because they believe their employees have a difficult time finding parking, they're less worried about diversifying the economy there and more concerned about finding more spaces for their employees to park.
They actually made a statement against office space. But what's the logic for that? I mean, they're getting more parking, so why does he care?
Well, you know, I can't speak to that. I do believe it's better to diversify.
It's a curious comment. I'll take it up with him, but that's it doesn't affect him in the slightest, so.
Right.
It's stupid if you ask me, and I'll tell him that.
So we did reach out to Washington Avenue BID as well. They seem generally supportive. It's beyond the boundaries, obviously, by name of their district, but, you know, they seem generally supportive as well. I've been trading texts with Daniel Sobrato of NDPL. We have not met yet, but we will meet in the very near future. This will be a long timeline to get this done. So I anticipate meeting within the next month.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair. Oh, go ahead.
No, I just, could you just address some of the issues that came up last night for all this?
Yes.
Thank you. So if you could address the parking and also the cash flow with two levels of office versus one.
Sure. I'm going to turn it over to Leonard right now. He's going to walk through the finances.
Go ahead. You're recognized. I hope this was not related to preparing this proposal.
That's how we deal with it.
Good morning, Leonard Roberts, Location Ventures, offices at 299 Alhambra Circle, Coral Gables, Florida. So we were asked to analyze what it would look like if we had two floors of office. The original proposal was 169 parking spaces, included 8,500 square feet of office tower, and then 8,100 square feet of a retail site. We were asked to take one level of parking off, which is approximately 38 parking spaces, which reduced your 169 down to 131 parking spaces, and replace that with an office. When we did that, on the pro forma, you increased your revenue by about $1 million, and you reduced the revenue from the parking, of lost parking, of about $100,000. So you had a net increase of approximately $900,000 per year. Now, the surrounding, because of that parking, right, there are requirements for parking for the office use, so some of that parking would be absorbed through that additional office use. Now, the payback period, because part of the proposal was that we would run the garage until our equity was paid back with a return of approximately 10% internal rate of return, and that was originally 10 years. When we did it with the second floor office, the payback period was in 6 years, in which the seventh year it would turn over to the city. We were also asked to look at what it would be if we were to contribute money to the city in replacement of the parking revenue during the time frame that we held onto the property until we got our internal rate of return. And so we first looked at it based on the existing income that the parking lot generates, and that was roughly around $400,000 and change. When we did that, we were able to achieve our payback for like 24 years. So then we started to reduce the number to kind of come up with a number that seemed fairly reasonable. So we got down to $300,000 contribution to the city each year and was able to pay back within 14 years. That's on the original model of 169 parking spaces. If we were to do that same model with the two floors of office, the payback period is less than 10 years with that same $300,000 contribution.
Mr. Vice Chair, I think you wanted to be recognized. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things. First, on the community outreach, I'm glad we're having those conversations. As those groups sort of formalize what they stand, i.e. they want more parking, they don't want office, or maybe they do, it'd be good to get something in writing just so we have an actual commitment. I am pleased to see the transition of extra office to the parking. I know we need more parking, but part of me thinks the value is in a catalyst project, activating that area, having people in place. I think the economics are getting better. Candidly, I'd like them to keep getting better. That's what I would like to see. So I think we're making some headway. That's goodness. Question on the parking. Does the city have the option operated, or have you all operated?
So the proposal that we're presenting is for us to operate, granted, working with the city with their process. This will be your garage eventually. It is your garage, but it will be operated by you eventually, so we want to make sure that anything we put in place is consistent with the city's operational standards.
Do you have any objection if the city decides it's in the residents' best interest for us to operate with the same ownership, the same thing? Do you have any objection to that?
No objection.
That's something, because, you know, we're talking about that in a similar vein. And I know we talked about it briefly at the last meeting, and we had a meeting about it, that you all could play a proactive role in terms of trying to get commitments, leasing, marquee tenants, accelerate that process. That's still baked in.
Absolutely.
Because that's a big deal, right? It's not just we're adding some parking. We're landing some marquee office tenants. This is all coming together in an accelerated way. So that, I got your commitment. You're going to do that. You're going to take up that leasing role for us. Okay, with
yes.
That, colleagues, I am supportive of the project. I think the key choice point in front of us is, do we do the traditional RFP, which I understand there's some argument for, or do we do this accelerated time frame? I think a lot of work still needs to go into this. I think we need to really beef up the economic returns for the city. That said, I land on the more accelerated time frame, the proposal in front of us that the developer is making, because I believe that we need change in that area. It has taken a while. We haven't had the signature project. We haven't been able to declare victory. This is not victory, but this is a step towards victory. And so I'd rather accelerate that, and we could talk about, I don't know, if it's 90 days or so, we can make it better. And maybe just a question, Raphael, if in 90 days it doesn't work and the economics didn't get to where we are not under obligation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so colleagues, that's a let's work hard, let's try and do this. If it works, good, and if it doesn't, we'll do something different. And I will frame that in the form of the motion if that is the will of this body.
And I'll second it. Commissioner Samuelin, I like your line of reasoning and your approach, so I'm fully supportive of the way you sort of outlined the proposal and the options in front of us. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you both. Let me ask a couple of more questions if I can. We had asked you to look at the parking. Are you able to free up some of the parking at night?
Yeah, so we originally when we had the request, just kind of give some background, the intent behind us wanting to build a garage is to be able to provide parking for our urban concept on 12th and Washington, and that would urban concept includes residential, includes office, and some retail. The objective was to have those 60 spaces during the day available for those office and retail tenants, and then in the evening for the residential. Well, so what we reviewed what potential opportunities would be for releasing parking, and we've said we will start off with 20 parking spaces. But with that said, to release it to the actual public in the evening, what we would do is on a quarterly basis or some kind of time frame, analyze how many actual residential tenants are using the actual spaces, and if there are less tenants, then free up additional spaces. So we'd work with the city to kind of find out what's available, but we'll start off with approximately 20 spaces to release to the city in the evenings.
Okay, great. So I too am very supportive. I think we've made a lot of progress, and I am also very supportive of this accelerated approach. We need to have some level of competition, but I don't think we need to start over with a with a new RFP. So with that, Mr. Larkin, I've got a couple of questions for you and also for our legal staff, and that is you have an original proposal before us that you've submitted. We've asked you to do some additional work. That triggers, if we decide to do this accelerated, we would then invite people to come back and give us something. So I guess for both of the attorneys, what would we put out to the public if, I mean, what I think is happening here is we're in agreement that we're going to send this to the commission with a recommendation, right? And by the way, I'm in favor of anywhere from 60 to 90 days on keeping that open. But what would go out to the public for our comment? Would it be the first proposal, or would the offeror have a chance to amend? I am very supportive of having this second level of office. I think it's critical. It could be a catalyst in that area, and also the cash flow is incredibly important to the city. So what would you anticipate,
and,
Mr. Larkin?
I can address that. So I think what you would be doing, you'd be accepting the unsolicited proposal and then issuing a call for alternative proposals under this P3 statute. It's not a bid waiver, so we don't need to waive competitive bidding. It is a procurement. It's just a different type of procurement. And the notice that would be published would advise the public that you intend to accept an unsolicited proposal and provide the parameters. And then within the 60, 90-day time frame, then other proposers could submit, including the initial proposer. They could change their proposal and submit as well.
Okay. So is that your understanding, Mr. Larkin?
Yes, sir. And what we would further do, I want to make sure Raphael's on board, we would, in your motion, you know, you put your preferences in your motion today, like two levels of office. You know, this is your asset. We don't have a dog in that fight, and I honestly think it's the best approach. So we would conform our proposal to be in accordance with the motion that you make today.
Okay, so could we amend that then? Because I'm very supportive of having two levels of parking, two levels office. Of office, and I think the lower level of office took up the entire footprint where the upper one had some sort of terrace area, right?
Correct.
So I'd like it to be that specific if we could.
Yeah, so just to amend the motion, because I too think the second level of office is right. There was a verbal commitment that if the city wanted to operate on parking, we could. There was the commitments to help and take ownership for some really rapid-fire leasing, so it's big news. I made it clear, I think we all clear, we want the best economic deal possible, and I like your appropriate aggressiveness to say 60 days and in all circumstances no later than 90.
Yeah. Are you comfortable with
that? Yeah, I love the idea.
Okay. Perfect.
Mr. Chair, I have a question that I'd like LV to or Michael to clear up. With the first option, they had requested for 60 parking spaces. Now that they're adding additional office, are the 60 spaces still to remain, or do you have an ask for more?
We still need the 60 spaces.
Just 60?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think the 60 is what you need on another
Washington Avenue
across
office.
The way.
Correct.
And then, so Raphael, we're gonna send this back to the full commission with a recommendation as per the motion.
And you have a caller, Mr. Chair, if you'd like to hear from the public.
Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's hear from the caller.
All right, Mr. Roberts, you're on.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Mr. Roberts.
So my interest in this project specific, my concerns are, you know, it's a business plan, right? But there's no guarantees associated with the incomes that they're projecting. I didn't hear about operating expenses in any way. I didn't hear about those 60 spaces. Are they paying anything for them besides the 10% profit?
Full market rate on the 60 spaces. It's per the proposal.
Okay. So my concerns are they going to guarantee, you know, a 10-year buyout where the city owns the property after 10 years? You know, some sort of guarantees associated with the project. Additionally, what sort of maintenance are they going to do on the building so that we don't get a piece of crap after 10 years brought back to us? Those are the two biggest concerns I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Thank you, Stephanie.
They are triple net leases, and they'll be responsible for all maintenance and repairs.
Right, exactly. Mr. Larkin, do you have any questions for us?
No, sir.
And, okay. And you have one more caller, sir.
Okay, let's go ahead.
Through the chair. I do think Mr. Roberts makes some important points, particularly about downside risk. What bad things could happen in the next decade that we should be prepared for? What if all does not go to plan? I'd like to see any final document that would show those scenarios, how we would mitigate that risk. So I think it's an important point.
Go ahead, let's bring in the other.
Mr. Novick, you're on.
Good morning, everybody. The only concern I have is regarding the height waiver. I believe height should be decided by the electorate. The current zoning, to my understanding, provides for a 50-foot height limit, not a 75-foot height limit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Novick. Thank you so much. You have a comment, sir?
Yeah, I mean, just some of the comments that were made earlier. Who's paying for this?
We are.
Exactly. So, you know, lost in all this little, you know, criticism that we get, we forget that we're getting this, in essence, for free, that they're taking the risk and financing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, people love to sit in the bleachers and throw out zingers, and they totally miss the whole picture.
Yeah. You've got the financial risk. It's in your best interest to keep it leased. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense for you, right?
No, it doesn't. And we need it for our operational parking demand. We need to go.
Yeah.
So that building's going to start being renovated within months.
Yeah. One of the things you all might want to look at as we move forward is looking at the parking dollars, because I know you use $300,000 and $400,000. The pre-COVID numbers might be a little bit better than that, but you know, you'll propose the cash flow that you think is in the best interest of the deal.
We broke down the hard and soft costs, and it dropped dramatically to like in the low 50s. So we'll continue to look at that. That's good advice too.
Did we get any appraisal on this property?
No, we did not.
Okay, very good. All right, does everybody have what they need to go ahead, John?
Just a quick clarification. Is the motion include that the city operates the parking garage?
If I may clarify, that the city has the option, if it so chooses, to operate the garage, if the city believes that the developer doing that is in its best interest. So I think we have that flexibility. That's what the motion says.
We're in agreement on that. John, you got everything you need? Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. So, gentlemen, we're going to stand in recess for 6 minutes because I gave the teams a time certain of 10 a.m. to start the other. So I'm not going to start before 10 because that's the courtesy that I gave them. So we'll stand in recess until 10 a.m. Good morning. Again, we are resuming the meeting. We had a time certain at 10 a.m. for the rest of the items. I think that's going to be item 2, item 3, and item 5. Did I get that right, guys? So with that, this is the Lincoln Lane proposals. With that, I'm going to recognize the city, and we're going to ask you to go through both of the proposals, and then we're going to hear from the offeror. So, Raquel, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Commissioners. Raquel Williams, Economic Development Director. I don't want to touch on too many of the basic deal points that we covered at the last finance meeting on the 30th. Since then, we have been actively working with each developer team to negotiate the term sheet that you have before you today for consideration. One of the major inclusions in today's memorandum is the financial proposal for each project, and we'll go through that a little bit later. Since we met last, the Land Use Committee met on April 8th to discuss potential land use amendments, including the comp plan amendment that would allow for residential market rate units for P27, as well as the off-street parking requirement. We also discussed the height increase and how that could impact the projects. Since then, we have received the preliminary analysis from each team as it relates to parking, traffic mitigation, and infrastructure. And just yesterday, we received preliminary financial information as it relates to the appraisal of the properties, which will impact our negotiations going forward with specific concentration on the financial terms. So at this time, I will go through each project. Did you have a preference, sir? Sure. Okay. Thank you. So the TPC project would encompass the P27 lot. The project proposes 80,000 square feet of Class A office, 9,500 square feet of retail, as well as replacement of 154 spaces that are currently available to the public. The project would be TCO'd in 61 months with the parking component that is accessible to the public at 64 months. The project would incorporate rent that would either be base rent or the EGI, whichever one is greater, and that's effective gross income. TPC proposes to offer EGI at 4%, and the base rent would escalate by 2% or CPI with a 3% cap on CPI. TPC provided a lump sum payment in their proposal at $2.25 million at commencement of construction, which for them is at the tail end of year three. The rent would be $250,000 during construction, and it would increase to $550,000 at completion of construction, which is estimated to be in year six. Escalation would begin at stabilization, which is currently estimated in year eight. The rent would reset at year 51 and 75, and the total rent for the first term or the initial term of the lease at 51 years would be $41.5 million. The present value of the total would be $12.6 million. The present value in terms of price per square foot would be $206.90. In terms of some of the finer details, TPC did provide to the city an option to include inclusionary housing with 9 units of workforce housing. Those 9 units would be at 140% of the area median income. TPC did come back to the city with a proposal that included, at the city's request, the upfront payment, percentage participation, and workforce housing. However, we are currently evaluating how that would impact the base rent and what that would mean for the financial proposal over the term of the lease. I know that the TPC team is committed to working with the city, and we think that we can improve upon the financial terms based on the information that we've received based on the appraisal. We think that we can have further discussions with TPC in order to negotiate deal terms that would be more indicative of where we think the financial proposal needs to be. Going to Integra and Starwood's proposal, their project would encompass P25 and P26. This project would allow for phased construction in that the P25 lot would be developed ahead of the P26 lot. The project would include 129,000 square feet of Class A office and 25,000 square feet of retail. The project would replace the public parking, which is at 190 parking spaces. The TCO for P25 would be completed at 63 months, and for P26 it would be completed at 82 months. This phased parking approach would allow for the public parking spaces to become available at 54 months, which would provide an added convenience to the city's residents and visitors. The EGI for Integra is 5%, as opposed to TPC, which is at 4%. The base rent would escalate by 2% or CPI with the same cap at 3% on CPI. For the lump sum payment, Integra's lump sum would come at the effective date or the beginning of the lease term, upon referendum approval and certification, and they would provide a $2.5 million payment right at the onset. The rent would then go to $650,000 on the first anniversary, and then it would escalate At the six-year mark, when TCOP 25 is achieved, the city would receive an additional lump sum payment of $500,000. When P26 is TCO, the city would receive an additional lump sum payment of $500,000. The rent would also reset at year 51 and 75. The total rent over the 51 years of the initial term is $62.3 million. Present value of the total is $20.1 million. And the present value based on price per square foot is $234.82. In terms of the land use amendments, as I mentioned earlier, this project would benefit from the height increase. It would add about 20,000 square feet of Class A office, which would effectively mean more EGI for the city. The project can stand alone without the comp plan amendment, as it does not include residential housing as a component, and the off-street parking amendment is also not necessary for the project. Any questions?
Thank you, and we're going to get to the other presentations in a minute, but just for clarification, can you speak to the parking again? Both projects right now have surface parking lots, and so I know there's a phased approach on the P25 and P26. Will the city continue to enjoy renting those spaces and have the revenue during construction? And can you speak to that for both projects?
Sure. So at all times, the city would maintain the parking revenue that it would normally maintain if the parking lots went undisturbed. So that is during construction and after the project is complete. The city does have the option to direct the developer to operate the parking at the newly developed project. But again, the city would maintain the net revenues on the parking at all times.
Monica, I've got a question if you can come up, please, on parking. Don't you love it when I surprise you with a question?
I'm always ready for you.
So on page 37 of our briefing package, there's some numbers about parking revenue. And I noticed in fiscal year 18, the total for all three lots was 674, and then 19, 654. Then in 20, 278, I assume that revenue dropped because of the pandemic, and then 21, 488. Have you had a chance to look, and I realize I'm just asking this question off the top of my head, but in fiscal year 22, we're almost halfway through 22. Do we know what the revenue is running on those lots?
I don't know specifically on that, but in general, all our revenue has increased this month, parking revenue. We do have a new phenomena, which is the use of these disabled parking placards that have multiplied. So that eats a little bit away at our revenue, but in general, our revenue has increased. And these lots are very, very important to Lincoln Road in the bid. As they continue to grow and bring business, we need to support them. But yes, our revenue in general is up.
Great. Colleagues,
can I just ask a follow-up to that,
please,
Monica?
Please.
And if you have it handy, great. If not, maybe the next discussion. I'd love to understand utilization of these three lots, not just average utilization, but peak utilization during the high times. Because one of the things I'm looking forward to hearing from the presenters I want to talk about is quality of life impacts, and particularly as it relates to parking. So I'm not expecting an answer today, but, you know, how busy are these lots at their most important times, and where would the people go is the question.
The lots are generally full because they support Lincoln Road and 17th Street. For example, P26 supports Yard House and the restaurants in the area. And P27, you know, is always full. It supports the buildings north and south. So, they're highly utilized, and at peak times, they're full.
Good.
If I could add, Mr. Chair, that, again, all of the developer teams provided the preliminary analysis in terms of parking, and so parking would be mitigated during construction. They have identified privately owned lots as well as some other opportunities to provide for parking during that construction period. And so we do think that going forward, we're going to have our staff evaluate those reports in more detail, and we would come back to the City Commission with further information related to those reports.
Okay, great.
If I could add, I did look particularly to the P25, P26 construction facing, and it seems like they're doing the most they can to minimize impact of parking to the area. Just that whole facing that is being proposed would help alleviate the impact of construction. We're going to feel it, but we can only go for whatever is best.
Okay, great. So I don't know if it is TPC. Is anyone here from TPC? Okay, we're going to give you up to 8 minutes, Raphael, and you can have 8 minutes uninterrupted, and then we'll hear from the other team. Go ahead.
Perfect. My name is Donahue Peebles. I'm Executive Vice President at the Peebles Corporation. And thank you so much, Commissioner Richardson. Very much appreciate the generous allocation of time. But like my father always says, when you've got a good point, you don't always need all the time to make it. So what the City Commission has in front of it today is ultimately a confluence of thousands of man hours, both from the respondent teams and from city staff. And they have the opportunity to green light over $250 million of economic output, $70 million of taxable earnings, $6 million of annual reoccurring tax revenue, 1,000 jobs, workforce housing, a $30 million ground lease, and 100% replacement of the existing parking, which by our estimation yields about $800,000 annually to the city. The deal's transformational, but by no means is it easy. And I say that if we look at the numbers, a parcel like this is worth about $40 million. I've got a net present value of my ground lease, inclusive of EGI, of $29 million. But I'm providing a $17 million state-of-the-art replacement parking facility, bringing my purchase price to $46 million, which is 15% above market. And as I say it today, it kind of feels like we're paying quite a bit. But this was a widely marketed process. Colliers sent, by my count, something like 15, 20 emails to the development community imploring them to respond. And respond they did. Almost 20 folks responded to the RFI. But when the rubber hit the road, all right, when it came time to put their money where their mouth was, only 3 firms responded to the RFP. And I'm not saying that to pat ourselves on the back and say we did a good job. I'm saying that to say that these deals are difficult and they're complicated. And that's why you don't have high-flying New York City developers here. You have 2 firms that are local with half-century commitments to the city of Miami Beach. In fact, our firm not only has done the most recent office building and parking garage conversion, but we've partnered with the city of Miami Beach since 1996, and in every single instance, we've delivered. Now, the benefits of these projects span far beyond just their individual sites. In fact, they'll serve as case studies that Class A, an ultra-luxury Class A office, can be profitably built in the city of Miami Beach, and that Miami Beach, not Brickell, not Wynwood, is the home for large-scale corporate relocations, the type of quality firms that should already be here, which in turn drives property values, which drives tax assessments, which drives tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to city schools and infrastructure. These projects are catalysts. They're rising tides that lift all boats. And suffice to say, they're opportunities of a lifetime, but only if they're capitalized within the lifetime of the opportunity, and the development window is closing rapidly. The narrative surrounding Miami Beach is exceptionally positive, but it's facing fierce generational headwinds. We have inflation unseen since the 1980s. We have geopolitical instability in Western Europe unseen since the 1940s. We have a hawkish Fed hell-bent on raising rates. Every passing day that we don't push these projects forward endangers them, and the citizens of Miami Beach cannot wait another market cycle to turn what is, at this point, strips of undeveloped asphalt into productive and prominent members of the community. We'll be building what ultimately becomes an incredible regional asset and something that spurs development throughout the submarket, turning Miami Beach into, and this is how you know I read these Collier's emails, what Collier so aptly describes as a Wall Street of the South. I think I speak for myself and for Josh and for my father, our companies couldn't be more excited to do well by doing good for the city of Miami Beach. We're chomping at the bit to get started, and we're ready, primed and able to deliver these projects promptly and at the scale and quality that the City Commission expects. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
To handle any questions we have now and hold debate until after we've heard from both parties. So
I just have one. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you for what you and the other party have put forward. We have a budget guy. We have a business executive, and I like to roll myself around with the numbers as well. I think you just off the cuff sort of said it's a $40 million value, if I heard you right. But the NPV was closer to 29. So talk to me a little more why we shouldn't be getting, you know, 40 plus the Miami Beach premium.
Of course. We'll be providing a $17 million replacement parking deck that we incur 100% of the cost to construct, but the city receives 100% of the revenue. So we're taking not only the cost of building that asset, right, but the risk. So today it costs $17 million. A year from now it may cost $22 million. But we'll be delivering that at zero cost to the city, who will then be able to keep and hopefully increase their parking revenue.
Fair enough. And I don't want to go down the weeds, so I'll just one follow-up and yield to my colleagues. But that revenue of the garage is in the $29 million.
No, it is not.
Oh, you didn't put that in the 29.
That's correct.
Okay, so what when you add the revenue for the garage, what happens to the 29?
It goes up significantly.
To what?
I'm not sure, but certainly that would be in something excess like of to, the 46 no. million.
And then the second thing I would just say about it, you're saying it's going to be the city's asset, but we're talking a 99-year lease. So I don't know how much I want to describe it as the city asset. We are in a very hot market, and we have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure we get the best value. So I appreciate the transparency that it's probably a $40 million lot today. And, you know, as fiduciaries, we're going to be looking for that value. But thank you for the presentation.
Do you have any questions?
Not for Mr. Peebles at the moment, but just to put us on a path to sort of, you know, hopefully take action today. Mr. City Attorney, just, you know, we've got three lots in play, two different proposals. What is our hope of accomplishing? What are we hoping to accomplish today in terms of moving forward? Because we, you know, time is of the essence, and we've got the calendar to be mindful of to take action on these term sheets to bring to the full commission. Are we negotiating further terms today? I just want to make sure.
So I think we've got some options ahead of us. We can take action to move this to the commission, either favorable, unfavorable, or no recommendation. We are meeting again on the 29th. If we think there's more work to be done, we can hold these here until the 29th. Time will begin to run out, and so on the 29th, we would have to make a decision, I think, whether to leave them here and not move forward or to move them to the commission on May 4th for that meeting. Is that, Raphael, is that what? And
you could certainly do that. Our intent was to obtain any feedback that the committee might have. We have to have two readings of the ground lease and the development agreement, which we're aiming to bring to the commission at the June meeting, and then with the second reading at the July meeting, because that would be the deadline to get onto the November ballot. So I don't think that we would need to bring a motion to the full commission at this time, but you certainly could.
So then in terms of timing, we're meeting, the full commission is meeting on May 4th, right? And then, so potentially, if we decided to move it there, that could be first reading. Is that right?
We'd still need first reading of the full ground lease and the development agreement, and that would happen in any event in June.
Okay, June. And then we would have to be finished with this by what date to get it on the... Are we looking at the August ballot?
We're looking at the November ballot, and the deadline to place items on the agenda on the ballot is the July 20th City Commission meeting.
Okay, because it has to be done by the end of July?
By the end of July.
That's our last
meeting. July 29th is the Elections Department deadline.
I see, and the last meeting we have scheduled is July 20th.
That's correct.
Okay.
And May 4th would be the first reading of the land use amendments for the commission to consider.
Is that going to have to be referred to the Land Use Committee, or is that...
It already was considered at Land Use, and I think it's going to the Planning Board later this month.
Correct, April 26th.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what I'm driving at, what we're hoping to accomplish today, you know, in terms of recommendation to the full commission, you know, do we want to be starting to negotiate or direct staff to negotiate different deal terms on these term sheets today? And my guess is probably yes, just because time is of the essence. Look, at a macro level, I love what we're doing here, and I'm optimistic the voters will support this. This is a great idea for our city. We've got two, you know, world-class developers bidding on these projects, and it does everything we've all said we want to see happen in Miami Beach, which is to diversify and strengthen our economy, bring Class A office space here to make us more of a community to live, work, and play. The demand is clearly there. Our job now, I think, is to negotiate with these developers the very best deal we can on behalf of the city and our residents. And then, you know, hopefully voters come November will see what we all see, which is a fantastic opportunity. So I just want to make sure, the three of us are doing what we're supposed to do today, which is give direction to staff, hopefully refer this to the full commission for approval, and then any deal terms that we feel need to be refined, I guess do that today. Is that what we're trying to do today?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'll wait to hear from both.
So I have a couple of questions, and with respect to the TPC, and that is, housing is included in this, and I'm kind of curious about that. I get the live, work, play, but I'm just wondering if why you went in that direction as opposed to Class A. And I recognize that the opportunity was at least 50% on office, but I'm just wondering if cash flow might be better on office, or if you could just speak to that.
Absolutely. I think in responding to an RFP like this one, we're tasked with balancing competing objectives. On one hand, there's the obligation to maximize revenue on a present value basis to the municipality, and on the other, it's to achieve certain policy objectives. That's why we aimed for such a high-quality design. That's why we did our best to really knock the ball out of the park with respect to resiliency. And residential, and particularly mixed-income residential, is a part of that. I think environments yield the greatest value, and not necessarily economic value, but value to constituencies when there's a mix of uses. Office-only districts, you know, feel stale, and they don't have activity outside of working hours. And we think that the Lincoln Road District is an 18-hour-a-day district, and we want to ensure that there's eyes on the street, which yield public safety, right? And there's cultural vibrancy, both before and after work. And so we thought, given the city's priority to develop as much Class A office as possible, that it would also be important to provide a mixed-income residential approach so that we can create a vibrant mixed-use community that the Lincoln Road District already has and that we'll only build to.
And I appreciate that. But in terms of the economics, if we forget about the balance for just one moment and just look at the economics, which would generate more cash flow? Is it the residential option or is it the office?
It's something we'd have to explore in a bit more detail. As it sits today, an all market rate residential execution coupled with Class A office seems to be our most lucrative strategy. Certainly, we can explore a meaningful or slight redesign and pivot to all office, but we haven't done as detailed analysis there as we'd like to speak on in a public setting.
Okay. So, colleagues, I'd like to hear from the other team, if we can.
Yes,
please.
Just a couple
go ahead.
Sure. First, I had that same question about housing, and so I appreciate the answer. I also like to hear from Integra and how they thought of the potential need for housing. I will say from a messaging standpoint, it's sort of easy to say it's an all office, that's the need. When we start to diversify uses, albeit with a reasonable rationale, it gets a little bit more complicated in the nuance. So that's sticking to me. And I apologize if I missed it, and we don't necessarily need to see it today, but you referred to renderings. Do we have good images that we can start to see of what this looks like?
Absolutely, and I believe we shared them with the city staff.
Okay.
And they should be included in your packages, or otherwise we're happy to send them directly.
Okay, I just want to make sure they exist. I will find them, but that's an important element, and I believe they're in the package, but I'm glad I just wanted to confirm. That's all for now.
Thank you. And I just want to follow up, Commissioner Samuelin, on your comment. You know, I too, because we look at things from the economics, and I think the property's around $40 million, and so I start looking at what's the value of a $40 million asset, and that's where I've got a little bit of concerns about this particular project. So, you know, you're quite right that we're going to get a new parking garage, but the truth is that I've got a certain revenue stream with the asset as it sits right now, right? So I'm pulling a revenue stream based on a surface parking lot. And so you are going to have to build a $17 million parking structure, but I'm going to be looking to get that same revenue stream. And I recognize you've got to make an investment, but that does not change my revenue stream. Mm-hmm. And so I have to look at what is the marginal income on the deal. That's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at, because I'm going to get my revenue stream on parking if the city does nothing. Mm-hmm. So what is the marginal revenue on the value of the asset? And, you know, if you just take $40 million and 3% is $1.2 million, now I can discount off the revenue stream I'm getting now, whether or not that's $300,000 or $400,000, but then, and I think 3% is very modest. So that's something that concerns me, but let me let that sit. I will allow you to come back. If you want to address that, you can.
Absolutely. I really do appreciate the comment. I think it's well thought out, and I think that you're absolutely right. If the city were to sell this fee simple, I think they'd get around $40 million, but they would lose that revenue stream.
Right.
So when you talk about the marginal value, right, that marginal increment, it's the present value of – it's the $40 million less the present value of the parking lot. Right, so looking at it as though you could both keep the parking and make $40 million, I think is a bit of a logical fallacy, right? So in my mind, what we're providing is, of course, the reoccurring revenue, and then, of course, maintaining the parking revenue, but also those new metrics that I referenced earlier, $6 million of annual taxable revenue, right? $6 million of annual tax revenue, right? $70 million of annual taxable earnings. Now, of course, those don't go to the same place that the parking revenue goes and that the ground lease payments go, but ultimately they yield a significant economic advantage to the municipality. And so when we talk about $250 million of economic output, right, we talk about 1,000 permanent jobs, the second and third order conditions of those metrics pale in comparison to the present value of the parking lot, for one, right, and certainly in comparison to the $800,000 of annual revenue or so that we've estimated.
And commissioners, we would need to evaluate the assertion that the 154 parking spaces would come out to be that $17.7 million. So that's something that we would need to take a look at. I don't want you to take
How many
that.
Spaces is it? 174?
154.
One how many?
154.
154. Yeah, I think the 17 is high based on some estimates. I know I've been working on some other things, and it's not 25, but it's somewhere probably between 50 and 75,000 a space generally. Is so we're talking maybe in the neighborhood of 12 million. Go ahead.
No, I really appreciate the follow up, and I think we're thinking about the same issues related to this. One, I assume we're going to soon hear about the status of appraisals and what those numbers look. And once those are in hand, I believe our CFO probably is going to want to wade in and set us straight on net present value, what the value is today versus the income streams we're dealing with, and really make it clear what the incremental. And the last thing I'll say about that, you know, let's say we're believers in the $40 million. Let's say that's order of magnitude, right? Are you thinking in the next 5-10 years Miami Beach is worth more or less? Sitting where we sit, we're pretty bullish on our prospects. So if you ask me what's it going to be worth later, I'd go much higher than 40. But a good conversation will continue.
And to your comment, and I have to say, you came prepared, and I appreciate that. You know, I fully recognize that I can't keep the asset and get the revenue stream at the same time. So, again, I'm looking at the marginal revenue. With that, we're going to pause this, and I want to bring up Integra. And then what we're going to do is hear from the other team, and then what we're going to do is open it up and decide what we're going to do with these two projects. So, gentlemen, how are you this morning?
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. So we're going to give you the same opportunity. We'll give you 8 minutes, and we'll let you use your time uninterrupted as you wish.
Great.
Sure. Commissioners, we have provided you with a spreadsheet. There's a lot of numbers flying around. There's a lot of numbers in your packet this morning. But we have provided you a spreadsheet that lays out for you our original submission with the RFP, our financial proposal, where the revised guaranteed minimum rent ended up through negotiations thus far, what that increase is from our original proposal. We have gone up in every category. The percentage increase, so you have that. We've also included what the rent would look like with the 5% EGI kicking in, so you can understand what that looks like each year. We've also provided for you on an annual basis the estimated property taxes that would be coming to the city, as well as your retained parking revenue. We understand this is revenue you already have. And then we've given total compensation that would be forwarded to the city under both scenarios, both minimum rent and EGI rent, percentage rent. And I have with me this morning Andrew Korn with Starwood, who will take it from here just to give you a synopsis on that, and we can go from there.
Thanks, Brian. So I'm going to talk through some of the things that are on this sheet and also the project as a whole. But good morning, everyone. My name is Andrew Korn. I'm a managing director at Starwood Capital, and I work out of our headquarters building here in Miami Beach, which, as you know, successfully opened in the first quarter of this year and was fully leased before we opened. I'm here representing Lincoln Road Property Owner LP. We're a joint venture of Starwood Capital, Integra Investments, and the Comras Company. We are proud you selected us to negotiate on parcels P25 and P26 and appreciate that opportunity to negotiate these as one opportunity. I'm here with our development partner, Victor Ballestas from Integra, who's joining remotely. Also, our counsel from Bills and Sundberg, Carter McDowell, who's joining remotely, and Brian May of Prodigy Public Affairs here. We've been negotiating with your staff consistently over the past 8 weeks, and let me say, on behalf of our team, we appreciate their diligence and consideration during these negotiations, which at times have been spirited, but always respectful. We believe we have negotiated in good faith to come to an agreement on the overwhelming majority of terms. I'm going to highlight for you the strength of our financial proposal, which we believe will provide a successful Class A office project for the Lincoln Lane District and provide the city with a strong financial return. While we believed our RFP submission provided a strong financial proposal, it has increased significantly through the negotiation process with you all. As you may remember, our original proposal included an immediate post-referendum payment to the city in the amount of $2 million and provided for substantial rent during construction of $500,000 per year for 5 years. And beginning in year six, our rental payment was a minimum rent of $500,000 or 5% of effective gross revenue, whichever is greater. After year five, our minimum rent would increase by a minimum of 2% annually. After concluding our financial negotiation with your staff, our upfront payment to the city upon referendum approval has increased by $500,000 to $2.5 million, and our minimum rent each year, beginning 1 year after the referendum, would increase from the $500,000 we originally proposed to as follows. In year two, $650,000. In year three and four, $725,000. In year five, $750,000. In year six, $1.25 million, which includes additional rent at the building opening for P25. and year seven, $1.27 million, which also includes additional rent for the opening of P26. In year eight, our minimum rent would adjust to about $788,000 and then increase each year by CPI between 2 and 3%. In the first 8 years alone, while each of our Class A office buildings are still being permitted, constructed, and open for business, we pay the city a total of $7.87 million, which is an increase of over $2.5 million from our RFP submission. And that's just in the first 8 years alone. A couple of other items that we believe bring significant financial value to the city. First, for the first time, the city will receive property taxes for both of these parcels. We estimate that will begin in about the $800,000 to $900,000 range for P25 and P26 once these buildings are opened. When adding property tax payments to the lease payments, the city will be receiving over $1.5 million in new revenue per year on P25 and P26. In addition, the city will not lose any parking revenue that it currently receives from each parcel, not during construction nor during the lease term. And I might add that our team will be paying over $6 million to rebuild the public parking that will be contained in the new parking decks for P25. And for clarity, that's just the cost of your parking spaces, not the additional cost that we'll be spending on our parking spaces. When adding the city's parking revenue to the lease payments and the property taxes, the city will receive well in total more than $2 million per year from the development of P25 and P26. Furthermore, I'd like to stress that our same team of Starwood and Integra is the same team who developed our headquarters on Miami Beach. This was a successful execution and a timely delivery, and this was the first Class A office building built in Miami Beach in 20 years. So we have the recent experience, proven experience, to be successful here. And we've also brought in Michael Comrass from the Comrass Company to our team, whose strength in the retail market is very important given his experience and his commitment to Lincoln Road. In terms of our project, the RFP asked for Class A office, so that's what we prioritized. We are proposing 130,000 square feet of office here. And we also want to emphasize, as was mentioned by your parking expert earlier, our proposal across these two lots includes a parking mitigation strategy where we can utilize each of the two lots we have at different times during the construction period, as well as a valet that we will pay the cost of so that there is no parking loss to the city and no parking revenue loss to the city and without any other parking lots needed to help make that happen. I'd also like to add that if you move forward with Starwood Capital, you have our $10 billion fund backing this project and ready to invest immediately, so we don't require any fundraising to get this project done. Commissioners, thank you for your time. We're available to answer any questions and address any concerns you have.
Go ahead. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I did with PC, I want to thank Integra, Starwood Capital, for all the good effort you put so far. You get to go second. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it leads because your first colleague did such a fine job as well. So same basic questions. They opted for housing as a use, and I got a very reasonable answer that said mixed use. We want activation during the time. We don't want it dead at night after the office workers go home. You had a similar decision to make. How did you think about it and land 100% office?
Well, we have ground floor retail, to be clear, as well. But we just listened to the RFP, what you all decided that you sent out a request for proposal to develop, and that was prioritizing Class A office, frankly, based on our success on our headquarters building and how we were able to lease up the rest of that building. So we were listening to what you all said that you wanted to diversify your economy.
Okay. And then TPC was also kind enough to just, you know, ballpark, that's a $40 million in today's market. As you look at the value of those two garages, what would be your estimate, and how does it stack up with the present value of the current terms?
I don't have that exact number. We've been looking at this as a ground lease, and I think it's important to not compare a sale of the parking lot, fee simple, and a ground lease payment for multiple reasons. I mean, one is, as an office building, and as a firm that acquires many office buildings and sells a lot of office buildings, you have to come up with valuations and cap rates. And if there's a ground lease versus not a ground lease, that changes what you'll pay for a certain building. And different ground leases have different, you know, known amounts and unknown amounts, but that inherently changes the valuation for a buyer. Also, you know, I think the NPV is obviously a payment over, let's say in this case, 51 years or 99 years, and it gets valued back versus a single payment today. But that's your option to choose. I mean, the the dollar, the total dollar amount, I mean, in this, the guaranteed minimum rent alone, and our number is a lot higher, is $67 million. I mean, that's going to be higher that you'll get over 50 years, more than if you just sold it tomorrow. And, yeah, discounted back, it's going to be worth less, but that's when you make the decision to do a ground lease, you're making the decision that I want payments to be further in the future, which are going to be worth less from a net present value perspective. So you can't compare the NPV to just what you could get in your hands tomorrow, or else, you know, you could just sell it outright. But I know you guys want to maintain revenues and own it long term, and you'll get to, you know, continue to reap the benefits for forever.
I understand your point, and you're right, it's a 99-year lease. It's not exactly apples for apples, but to some extent, from our standpoint, if we wanted to, we could sell it. That is not a bad benchmark to what the net present value is of what you're offering. So, to be continued. Thank you.
Commissioner, the one thing I would add there is that, you know, you actually, the city actually gets to have their cake and eat it too in this instance, right? You get to retain the revenue that you currently enjoy on the property, and you significantly increase that going forward, not just by virtue of lease payments, but by virtue of property taxes as well, which are not insignificant numbers.
And I'll also add the percentage rent as well, which we've shown here.
We've tried to include the total numbers on the right side of the spreadsheet we provided you, so you have an understanding of how everything adds up, your retained parking revenue, your lease payments, and your property taxes. So you can see the whole picture.
But to the point we made earlier, and I appreciate the spreadsheet because it has all the number. The far right, $195 million, that includes the current parking revenue, right? The retained, the 46,
correct,
right? So we're going to retain that. And as I mentioned earlier, when I'm looking at the marginal increase in revenue on the property, we're told it's worth around $55 million, I think, was the appraisal for P25 and P26. So, you know, I'm going to get that revenue off the asset if I do nothing. What were the numbers? You mentioned on parking how much, I think, the parking element for P25 was, I forgot what you mentioned. What was the number on that?
So we think the cost, I mean, as you know, construction costs have been increasing a lot. So, we think at least $30,000 per space is going to cost to build. And I think if I ask tomorrow, the number is probably higher. And so we're being, I think, conservative in that world. So at $30,000, we got to about, you know, over $6 million for. I think
$30,000 is probably maybe on a little bit on the low end. I know some of the numbers I was looking at, the Byron Car Law, when the team was working on that, were as high as 70 on some estimates. So, and to be clear, if we sold the asset and the property were developed, we would be getting the property tax stream regardless. So, I mean, it's important to look at the revenue, but if I sell it, I have $55 million in the bank, right? And then unless somebody sits on it, they're going to develop it. And even if they sit on it, they're going to pay a certain amount of property taxes. But if they develop it, then they're going to pay more, and I'm going to get that revenue stream as well. Commissioner Areola.
I mean, yes, our job, as elected officials and legislators here, you know, is – It's multifaceted, right? It's not just looking at this from a sale perspective and what we can get. That's one of the tools we can use to analyze a deal. But we also have a lot of other responsibilities, which is, you know, how do we diversify an economy? How do we support other assets that we have, particularly in this neighborhood, particularly Lincoln Road, which we're about to make an enormous investment in renovating Lincoln Road, and projects like this, how does that play into that investment? In my opinion, having, you know, daytime use with office workers supports the local businesses on Lincoln Road, whether they're, you know, restaurant cafes or retail establishments. So it's a multifaceted analysis that we have to do. So, you know, clearly, at least for me, we're not going to sell this property. That's just one of the benchmarks we will use to analyze whether this is a good deal relative to an outright sale. But it's not a perfect analysis, because we're supposed to do more than just trying to get maximum dollars, because we have a city to build and run, and that's why we're doing a P3 here. And we instructed the respondents to go for Class A office space for a reason, one of which is to support Lincoln Road, but also just in community building to have a true live-work-play city. The sale of the asset is one way of stress-testing whether these numbers make sense. So that's all I'll say. Yeah, as an aside, and my friend Rick DiPico and I go way back, you know, Miami Beach in the 90s was the hub for office use, particularly in the entertainment community. You know, all the law firms would go downtown, but, you know, this was the hub for the Estefans, for Sony Music, for MTV Latin America, and you probably remember better than I. Like, this was the only place those companies wanted to go. Sure. Unfortunately, we've lost our steam, and they've all gone to Wynwood and other places. So, you know, this is why I'm so excited about this, because this is our way to get back into the game of bringing great world-class companies to Miami Beach.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, so to a certain extent that we've got two projects, and I don't want to sit here and have a beauty contest in terms of which one I think is better, but honestly, I think the Integra proposal is the better one before us. I have a couple of questions about your cash flow. In your, I guess when you sign, you're offering $2.5 million, right? And then there's some cash flow in years 2 through 7, or maybe in, is it year 6 when you're going to start coming online for, and then I see the cash flow jump up on the minimum rent. Is, and again, I've been very clear that I'm looking at the marginal revenue. I have an asset right now that's giving me a certain stream of cash, right? So I'm looking at the marginal. So in those early years, like the 2.5 and 650 and 725, you don't have an asset that you can utilize at that point. So that's just cash out of your pocket. Is there a reason that you're offering is that to us? Because you're not going to have a revenue stream yourself. That's coming out of a deep hole, right?
You guys are good negotiators. We originally... That's what the real answer is. I mean, we originally were going to construct both buildings together, so you were going to lose, frankly, your parking revenue, and you guys made it clear that that was important to maintain the parking for the residents, which we completely understand. So we've completely changed the timeline of our project. We're building later than, frankly, we would like to, but we're open to doing that and working with you all to make everyone and the residents happy here. So you are still going to maintain your parking revenue via the parking mitigation study that was referenced earlier. And then we're still giving you base rent on top of that because we want to try and work with you all and make this project successful. So that is just our way of trying to get something done with you all.
But just be clear, because at that point you don't have an asset yet that you can generate any income off of. So that's basically coming out of your back pocket, right?
Absolutely.
Because, and the 2.5 as well. I mean, so again, I'm looking at the marginal revenue. So I have an asset, and you're not going to start generating any income until potentially what, year six?
Exactly.
Year six.
And then, but you're, I guess, offering that up just as an additional sweetener. What happens between year 7 and 8? Because I see your minimum rent drops. What's going on there?
So I would think about it differently, that the year 6 and year 7 is the sweetener. So it doesn't actually drop it, because what's happening in year 6 and year 7 is we're giving the city $1 million in total when we open the doors, when you all grant us a temporary certificate of occupancy, and so that we can start occupying the building. So it is base rent that grows, you know, call it from the 750, and then you're getting an extra 500K from P25 when that opens, and an extra 500K the following year when P26 opens. So then it kind of reverts back to that 750, but grown.
Right. Right. And then the second column, the 67, is a guaranteed minimum. But we're also, I guess, we have the potential, upside potential, right, to get, is that the 104?
That's correct.
So you think if the asset is fully utilized, that our revenue stream will be 104. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then, again, I look at the same thing I was looking at earlier on the other. If I have a $55 million asset and just a very modest 3%, and again, I've got revenue of about $600,000 now, then, you know, if I just want a basic modest 3%, which some estimates could be as high as, I think, 6 or 7% on the asset, then I'm looking at trying to generate $1 million. And I think your proposal, while it's, you know, maybe in years 8 or 9, is a little lower than that. The truth is you're front-loading the payments year 2 through 5, when quite frankly, I wouldn't have, and thanks to the city's staff for pushing them, I wouldn't have expected any revenue stream, honestly, before you had the asset. So I kind of think that makes up the couple hundred thousand in the later years. So, you know, gentlemen, I don't know what we want to do here, but I'm feeling like I want to keep this here until the 29th and do a little bit more work on it. But I would love to hear from you all. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, would like to keep it here. This has been a great discussion. Both presenters have done a really good job. I do have a couple things for staff. But before we move off of this Integra proposal, you know, I want to pick up on a couple things my colleague said. I do think we need a holistic view. Doesn't look like we're selling things tomorrow. That's a benchmark. And so I am going to want to talk to staff about quality of life impacts as it relates to parking and traffic. And the specific question, you mentioned that you didn't need to do any fundraising. Do you have a going in as to the mix of debt and equity sources of funds to get the project done?
We believe, you know, our intention is to take a 60% construction loan, but that's not required for us to continue to move forward. We can, you know, all of our equity is going to go in first in a project like that anyway. So we, and if we needed to, we could fund the whole thing all cash. We certainly have the money to do it, but we would intend to get a roughly 60% construction loan.
That was the sense I got. Thank you.
But just if I could, but I think what you're saying is that that's your goal, but if you weren't able to get the debt financing terms that you needed, you still have the capacity to move forward. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And the equity requirement that we have is 10% for the developer.
Thank you for that. Raquel, you know, as I think about this, there's a lot of goodness in the office, and I've been, with my colleagues, a big proponent of diversifying away from more transient uses. I actually think we're seeing a good bit of that happen in the marketplace. We see it at 5th and Michigan. We've got upzoning on Alton Road. There's another project the Commissioner Areola are co-sponsoring. The market seems to want to do some of that. And, of course, we have a vibrant market. I think we're going to have the best real estate year growth that we've had in quite a while, and $500 million offers for residential towers. So there's a lot going on, and I must admit, you know, it raises at least the question of how much we need to be doing to incent a train that is making its way down the field. If there were no quality of life impacts, the equation becomes easy. Goodness for the office diversification, no problem. But we know that's not the real world. The real world is traffic isn't real fun on 17th Street. We have parking issues. People use those lots. We have infrastructure underground, water, sewer, stormwater. And there's a big, big project right across the street, right over there, of a convention center hotel. So for me, and I've been very consistent, as I think about this, I see the upside. I like the upside. I've been a big proponent of it. But I really need to understand how those quality of life impacts come together. And how are we going to mitigate? Like, people like those lots. They're not the most beautiful thing. I get it. But that's convenient. You go in, you drive in, you go to Apple. Seems easy enough. And I'm just looking forward. If today's not that day, I got to admit, I want to do it soon. I want to see what's going to happen when those lots go away. How do we balance that convention center hotel project with either, you know, two or one projects or maybe no projects here? How does that happen so that we can really look at our residents and say, we have thought about the quality of life impacts? Because that's probably the number one concern I have. Could you comment a little bit?
Sure. We definitely considered the construction of the Convention Center Hotel when we directed the developers to do the parking mitigation and, you know, preliminary analysis in terms of traffic and parking. We have received those reports. Our staff is currently looking at the impacts that have been presented. We do need to do some further study on that and perhaps could come back to the next finance meeting and talk a little bit more about that in specificity. As it relates to the inventory of Class A office, we do have demand here. Our inventory has been largely flat. We do see some uptake recently with 18 Sunset, but we don't think that that is enough to really satisfy the demand that we're seeing. We also want to be able to attract some big-name tenants, some large anchor tenants that would be able to take up substantial square footage. We're seeing a lot of boutique office renovations and repositioning of existing office buildings, but we haven't seen anything substantial. And just to look at what the public sector has been able to do in terms of Class A inventory, if you look at 1691 Michigan, the Lincoln, as well as 1601 Washington, Starwood's former headquarters, those properties sit on publicly owned land. And, you know, the development happened through a P3 deal. So the public sector has been the one really pushing for diversification of the economy. Had it not been for the city's previous efforts, our inventory would be that much less.
Those are good points. And 1800 Sunset on Purdy Ave is a great example. Terminal Island was a big one, too. We increased height to get that project going. I'm very happy to hear you'll be bringing something back to us about the operational analysis. The miss is to pass these projects forward and then say, well, how does it happen? Who goes first? What is the traffic patterns during this? What really happens to parking?
Well, so, a lot of that will be determined through the approval process. So there will be further study and requirements that are necessary at that time. Prior to that moment, all we have are the preliminary reports that have been provided. So
I have great respect for everything you're doing. But we're asking the voters to vote, and they need to know. And you're asking us to vote, so we need to know what we know. And I've said this very consistently. I understand it's not the final answer, but we really need to be thinking about those operational impacts, especially with two. So let me, my punchline, Mr. Chair, I agree with you. We should keep this at committee. I think it's been a good discussion. I know you said, and we have two fine folks, two people have done long-standing work in this city with incredible reputations. You said maybe we don't want to have a beauty contest. I almost wonder if we do a little bit, because here's my thought process. We have three options. We can proceed with neither project to the voters. We could put both projects in front of the voters, or we could roll up our sleeve with our capable staff and pick the one and say, this is our best shot, and put that in front of the voters. Every time I think about it, while I don't have a final position, sort of an inclination, if I'm going to support either of them, would be to consider one. I am concerned about confusing the voters with different projects. I am concerned of the operational impacts of one or two lots, depending on what you have in one project, another lot, the Convention Center Hotel. I'm concerned about quality of life. I'm concerned what you don't know as you go through a process like this. Maybe the next time you do it, you'd know a little bit more. And I really want to be able to look at the voters and say, this was the best deal. Now, we went through a competitive process. I think there were three bids. Was that accurate, Raquel?
Three teams submitted for various combinations of the lots.
So we did. We went to the market. A lot of people did the RFLI. We got three bids. We're down to two fine bidders. And to me, if someone said, how do you know you're really getting the best deal? If folks knew ultimately that we were heading, and it's probably going to be my inclination to try and, you know, if I'm going to support one, it would be the one we feel strongest about, sets us up to look at our appraisals, get some capable advice from our CFO, get really sharp with our pencils and look at something to proceed. I know we have a lot of options. I haven't landed completely, but in the spirit of transparency, that's sort of what's in my mind right now.
Thank you. And Commissioner Ariel, I'm going to recognize you, but I just want to acknowledge one of the things that you said, and that is, as a city, we have a responsibility to look at a holistic approach in terms of what we're trying to accomplish for city goals here. And I think that's incredibly important. And to your point, Commissioner Samuelin, you know, while this is not a sale of the land, it is an encumbrance of the land for 99 years. Yeah. And so whatever decision we make today, while we're not going to sell this land ever, I don't believe, we are going to encumber it, and so we need to get it right, because for the next 99 years, that's what's going to be there. Right? Commissioner Ariel.
Yeah, look, I like both projects, and I want to see them both go through. You know, the question is, you know, how can we continue to refine the deal for the best in the best interest of the city? But you know, you can't ask for two, you know, more highly qualified developers. We're lucky to have them, and I think they both have outstanding proposals. You know, hopefully we can make them a little bit better. But you know, I hear what you know my colleague says about things like traffic and quality of life, and it's very valid. It is part of our duty to make sure that we have a minimal impact on residents' quality of life. I know that once these projects are done and completed, the quality of life will be that much more enhanced, because it's local jobs, strengthening our economy, strengthening our finances, and you know, I think bringing some really hopefully great companies to relocate here. I think it's a huge win for our city. I've heard, I've been doing this now 6 years, I hear that all the time, traffic, quality of life, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, for the most part, it's just, you know, saber rattling. I remember on 17th Street when the Trader Joe's project was being built, everyone said that was going to be the end of time, right? That 17th was going to be clogged. And that didn't happen. You know, Trader Joe's is a great community asset. We built the West Avenue Bridge. All that construction, when that was taking place, it was you know, inconvenient. But now we have an amazing amenity for our city that everybody enjoys. And that's what we're trying to do here, doing something that, you know, in the short term may be a little bit disruptive, but long term it's going to be enjoyed for generations. Question I have for Monica, I hate to put you on the spot, but the 17th Street garage, which is our largest garage, what's our current utilization there is the question. And then what do you think would happen as these projects are coming out of the ground? A lot more parking, my guess is, would be shifted to the 17th Street garage. Can it absorb more, or is it full most of the time?
So the boat show, Emerge, Bitcoin filled all garages. Filled this one, filled 17th Street garage, and even the Penn garage. We were sending people to Anchor. We were sending people to Collins Park. We came within 195 spaces to fill Collins Park. This month, today, yesterday, 17th Street garage was full. You may have noticed when you left yesterday that we failed to remove the cones, because this garage was full and we were screening for employees and access card holders. So I am so grateful that you gentlemen are looking at parking from every aspect. And Commissioner Samuelin mentioned the fact that, you know, lots are almost like curb spaces, on-street spaces. They're quick, you get in, you get out, you know. Once you start adding floors, it becomes inconvenient, and people will circle looking for. So what are we doing? We're not adding to our inventory. We're not doing that. We're replacing our inventory. We're creating more demand, but hopefully the added spaces is going to capture that. So I think that it is not the best use of land to have a lot When I came here 6-7 years ago, first thing that impacted me was how many lots do we have, and yet we have demand for parking. But, you know, like I was telling, we had a conversation the other day with asset management, and I was saying, you know, some people will tell you that parking is not the best investment. Parking by itself isn't, but look what it does for quality of life and quality of business. You know, what is happening on Washington Avenue? Maybe if we had more parking, we could stimulate business. And so the real value of parking is how it meets the needs to attract business and residents. You know, and I could use examples at airports or even at hospitals. You know, you park in a garage when you go to a hospital because there's no on-street parking. So I would say that these are great projects, that it adds to the value, that it increases the value of our lots, although our lots are valuable and accessible, etc. But from my perspective, and I've been doing parking for many years, the way to help traffic is to give vehicles a place to go. So if you have parking and people have a place to go, they'll stop circling. And you used to say 30% of our traffic are people looking for parking, convenient parking. So I would say that the best use is place parking at the bottom, right? So it's accessible. If I had my druthers and if I owned a lot, I would do a two-story or a three-story garage. It's still accessible. It's still easy to get in and out, right? So keep that on the bottom, and then it's the support for business. But these are great projects, and in particular, I'm very happy with the facing of 25 and 26. We're going to have impact. The hotel is going to impact us. We continue to grow. And listen, we've filled our garages, and the convention center, last I heard, was at 90%. If we go to 100% and we continue to attract events such as Bitcoin, we need parking. We need parking. So what do we do? I think that we need to be smart, and we need to start reaching out to the private operators. There is a supply, but we need to work with those private operators to help build that bridge.
So, Monica, you said with these projects we're not increasing our inventory, but I think we are increasing overall parking inventory. But just, I mean, our inventory is going to stay flat, right? But each of these projects has additional parking. So, for example, with there may be a residential component with 27, but 25, 26 at night, if the people that are working during the day have gone home, then that would free up parking for the developer to lease out to shoppers or diners on Lincoln. So overall parking inventory is being increased, but our inventory is staying flat.
So the as I see these projects, and I was fortunate to be in the evaluation committee, as I see these projects, they're creating sufficient parking to meet their added demand. Okay, so I promised you at a FERC meeting before that I was going to look at trends in our garages, and the trend really is the highest demand is during office hours. If Lincoln Road increases its nightlife, then absolutely we're adding to support that. I believe that our garages currently can support the nightlife. It's the day. And eventually, I think, as a city, we need to look also at employee parking because we're adding businesses and not parking. Yeah.
And on the, you mentioned the hotel. The parking component of the hotel has stayed in because I know at one point they wanted to take it out, but I think it stays in, right?
Correct. That was a long conversation with them, and they listened because they were going to remove it, and they added it.
Okay, good. I've got a couple of more questions for Mr. Peoples, if you don't mind, either one.
Let's do it together. So you got us both.
Perfect.
Okay.
You came very well prepared. Thank you. I'm curious about, again, I want to go back to the residential. I think Commissioner Samulin, you mentioned about the mixed messaging if both of these were to move forward. I worry about that. I worry about maybe some folks thinking that we're providing high-end residential. And so help me to understand your proposal on partial residential versus the office, and I'm curious whether or not you did any estimates on what it would look like if it were all office. So thank you, sir.
Great. Well, we'll tag team it. By the way, Donnie's done a great job articulating our perspective.
Amazing job. So thank you.
But I do want to say, one, by the way, we talked about value. And by the way, the City of Miami Beach is not a land speculator. City of Miami Beach is a municipality looking for outcomes, just like the rest of the United States. And we probably do more public-private partnerships than any developer in the country, and certainly a developer in the billions where we are. And most governments operate, including New York, operate from the perspective of outcome. What's the best outcome for the future of the municipality? And you all mentioned about, I think their appraisal was $55 million. Ours is 40. And there's some mathematical miscalculations, because last I checked, 3% of 55 million is not a million. It's $1,650,000. But the reason that these properties aren't worth these appraised values is you can't sell them. If we offered you $100 million right now, you couldn't pay us. You couldn't take the money. We've got to go to a public referendum to be able to buy the property. That undermines the value of the property, by the way. So however way we look at that. But our view was we've got to go to the public and be politicians, essentially. We have to do what you do. We have to go out here and get people to buy in to a concept and sell our concept to the public. That is not a real estate, ordinary real estate transaction. That's why the interest kind of waned in that RFI or RFQ to an RFP. We feel that in order to sell it, and I've been doing business in Miami Beach since 1996. I have built more public-private partnerships in here than anybody else, and my partner, Scott Robbins, and I have done more public-private partnerships with the City of Miami Beach than anybody else. So I can tell you that the public isn't going to just buy into the concept of all office. I mean, what we're trying to do is create, get people out of the cars. That requires longer-term strategic thinking. So getting people out of their cars and doing a mixed-use building so that they can live and work in the same place, and a part of it, and Donahue will go through the economics, a part of it is workforce housing. And we talked about this, remember, when I presented to the full commission, it was that we're going to do affordability by size and make this a much more vibrant community, but not doing ultra-luxury housing. It will be, you know, high-quality housing, but the idea is to mix the use there. And then, of course, you don't build parking for peak demand because you'll be bankrupt. You build parking for the constant demand and what your future plans are. And we think that our plan offers, I mean, we have Bark Ingalls. I don't know. I mean, he's one of the greatest architects ever to live. And so we think we're proud of our architecture, too. And it costs money to build that. And, again, you're left with that, too, because that's what the public gets left with when we leave here, when developers build. You get left with the quality of the product that we produce. And so we're trying to give you the top quality product. And I do take issue, by the way, with you saying that you prefer Integra. We're not competing against each other. They have a different site, and we have a different site. They have a different solution, we have a different solution. And we like our solution for our site. And we think it is extremely compelling, and we'll architecturally win some awards for it. But Donnie, why don't you talk to them about the economics of the two between, you know, the housing and the office use?
Absolutely.
Could we pay them more money?
Absolutely, and I think that's a great point. An all-office execution poses some absorption risks and meaningfully resets our hard costs. It's something that we'd love to explore more, but ultimately, as I mentioned earlier, we believe that a market-rate multifamily execution coupled with Class A office yields the highest revenue for the city. Now, the city, of course, as my father mentioned, is tasked with balancing competing objectives of prioritizing outcome oftentimes over economics. And so that's why we have in front of you two options. We have an option that includes workforce housing to ensure that middle-class folks have a place to live in Miami Beach and we pay less. Or we have a more lucrative option of all market rate, right, that allows us on a present value basis, inclusive of EGI, right, to get meaningfully close to that $40 million appraisal, notwithstanding the incremental cost of the replacement parking. In fact, when you add in the $800,000 or so of annual revenue on top of that higher offer, you meaningfully exceed what you would be able to yield by selling the property for $40 million and then getting 3.5% interest annually.
Yeah, one thing just to add to it also is that I'm office market is really tight here. We built the Lincoln, and we were owners in Lincoln Place as well with Michael Comrath and LNR, because that was built for LNR, our partner, and then Starwood ultimately acquired LNR, and that's how they got to be in our building, by the way. We're moving our office, our Miami office, to Miami Beach because we want to invest in the future of Miami Beach. I have personally moved to Miami Beach and am now a resident and voter in Miami Beach. We are leasing office space. Right now, we are working on a deal that will cost us more than Fifth Avenue in New York City. And we have no options. So it's a supply-constrained market right now. And what happens is businesses will lose interest if there's not enough inventory. You have to oversupply the market demand to attract more businesses here. If you have a tightly constrained office market, you will not attract a lot of businesses here, because they will look elsewhere where the inventory is more plentiful. And we are competing with other parts of this area of the region, and they're going to be building office space. Brightline, Palm Beach is going to have massive inventory of new office space. So I think it's important. We complement each other, and we'd love to see more office development because that will create more demand. And if we can do this with a strategic approach, we can get people out of their cars and on their feet and spending more time on the beach and spending their money while they're working here and then in off hours. But we think more office space is better, and it will serve you well, and it will serve the city well. I think the numbers are, we can't say, but they're almost $100 a foot. Mm-hmm. That's a staggering number.
So the point on the numbers, 3% of 55 is 1.65 million. But again, I was looking at, remember, the marginal revenue. I'm pulling over 600,000 on my revenue stream right now. So that's where I'm looking at the $1 million. I heard is that you believe the mixed use with residential results in a greater revenue stream than if it were all office and retail. Is that, or did I misunderstand?
With our current underwriting, that's correct. Yes. We'll take a deeper dive in evaluating an all-office execution, but as it sits today, we prefer the market-rate multifamily execution coupled with Class A office.
Ultimately, the longer-term value of the income stream is better with a mixed-use solution. I come from a place that was heavily dominant in office space, Washington, D.C., and downtown was dead, even though they had all these wonderful restaurants. And it wasn't until about 25 years ago the comprehensive plan got changed to require residential development in downtown D.C. that it become a vibrant city, and it's become an exceptionally vibrant city. What is missing is off-ocean, decent quality housing for people who earn some money and who work in Miami Beach and want to live in Miami Beach. And we think that, Lincoln Road and these office buildings, the two that we've built and the others that are going to be built and what Starwood built and the other buildings, they're creating jobs. People would love to live closer. And we think longer term that the mixed use is preferable. What's interesting here, though, is anywhere else in the country, they would be holding a gun to our head to build residential. Mm-hmm. So because that they understand that's what it takes to change the dynamics. And Lincoln Road, and I've been, again, here since 1996 doing business, Lincoln Road was down on its knees, became a mall, it came back, and then it's now having problems again. It's too tourist-dependent, and that's the reality is. And the big challenges that our city's having right now in terms of our quality of life is people, outsiders, coming in here and disrupting the quality of life. Well, if we bring more people here to live and work here, then, we can reduce that demand. And so that's a long-term solution. And that's why, I'm personally, and I made the decision on the residential when I saw the numbers, I'm personally passionate and convinced that the best land use development solution for this is to have some mixed use. And we've got public amenities on them. And of course, if we ever get to G5, we've got a massive park on top as well. There's a way to make these buildings live longer in terms of number of hours per day. An office building locks up, you know, and then, you know, but then people don't go away. And businesses still need demand for business. And so if we can start replacing that demand with more people who live there, I think Lincoln Row resumes, you know, some prosperity.
Yeah. How did the workforce housing element become incorporated? Because I think it's nine units, right?
That's exactly right. The city asked us. They said, you've included workforce housing and mixed income approaches in your other residential component and your other bids, but not in P27. Can you all include it? And we said, absolutely. In fact, across our portfolio, we have mixed income solutions across all of our multifamily. It's something we're familiar with. It's something we can execute on at a high level. As of now, we're doing $100 million in total cost of affordable housing nationally, plus additional near $250 million in the pipeline. Something we feel passionate about and something that really is a consequence of, you know, my father's stern direction to ensure that we're building not just for the upper echelons of society, but certainly for working folks who need a dignified place to live close to where they live, where they work, and where they play. And it was something exciting to us. So we went in. We ensured that the workforce housing had the same quality finishes as the Class A office. In fact, and those finishes are condo-level finishes. We're building the best quality multifamily residences in the marketplace, and we're doing so with capped rents for 20% of the units.
And that's important to know. We're doing rentals.
That's exactly
here.
Right.
So one of the things about why the prices keep being driven up for everybody to live here is everyone does condos. Mm-hmm. And that's and frankly, I think that we need to demonstrate in the marketplace that rental housing is viable, workforce housing is viable. And by the way, we can make housing much more affordable by size. I mean, most people want, if they want a one-bedroom apartment, if it's 900 square feet versus 750 square feet, that's not that big of a difference for them in how they live, but it's a big number on the economics. And so we're going to be very creative in terms of the size of these units. I mean, there are well-paying jobs in Miami Beach. There are going to be more well-paying jobs coming here to these offices. We need to provide housing for a broader demographic and not have to make somebody spend millions of dollars to buy a condo in order to live here and work here. And I think that that's something that we can do. And if you look at it, many of our rental residents or workers, they live on the other side of the bay in the design district and elsewhere where there's a strong volume and inventory of rental homes.
Great. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the additional commentary on what's leading you down this path. And I did make that exact point of, is it simpler to make the case just for offices? And I could see that argument. But Mr. Peebles is making some good points as well. The county has declared a housing emergency, and we do hear from our residents, particularly in that middle class area, an important need. So it is a less clean message because it's a couple different things, but it may be something that I certainly want to give some additional thought to, and maybe both teams might want to give a little thought to, because there may be some residents, you know, we all get the math that says, you know, offices, more people here, they spend all the time. That feeds our funds for police, fire, and the goodness that we do. That's, I think we get that. That's not always for the people who are busy putting food on their table, worried about their health care. They don't do that thinking as clearly because they've got other things in their world. Housing may be one way to bring to life value in a quicker way. So that's something I'd like to explore further. On that point, have you all thought about, you know, you said rentals, like the rough size of the units, the rough rents, has that something you've gotten to, or do we have to wait for the next meeting?
Absolutely. We've certainly had that information, and we've provided it to city staff.
Okay.
What I'll say is that we're very, very early on in the design process. And so though this is our best guess for where we will end up right now, we're going to be reevaluating unit configurations to be attentive to market demand and, I think more importantly, attentive to workforce housing needs.
We believe, by the way, that, I mean, look, Miami as a whole, one of the problems since I've been doing this for 36 years is up and down, the volatility. Condos come and go, so we get a boom and bust kind of cycle. Demand for housing never wanes. People need a place to live. They just can't necessarily afford to pay millions of dollars, and the market softens up, et cetera. So we believe that this project will demonstrate that there's a viable demand for mixed use, and it'll lead to the private sector doing it as well, and that we can do it in a way that appeals to a growing workforce here who is earning money, who's, you know, upper income, middle to upper income and workforce combined, and to make that work economically. And we figured out, we believe, how to make it work better. I think an all office building solution, you know, it's a supply and demand. We don't want to, you know, overwhelm the market, but at the same hand, we do want our building to live a longer period of time. We think that that will make us more money too.
And I think you make a very valid point about having people stay in the community, and because, you know, Lincoln Road can be somewhat quiet at night, right? And we've seen the evolution of when it really took off, and then right now it's a little sleepier than we would like to see. And so if we can keep people in the area, and I go back to Commissioner Riola's point, is that, you know, our job is to look at other things that are important for the community and not make the dollar the most important element at all times. So having said that, Raquel, yesterday when we met, you and Eric, you know, we gave you a deadline basically of this meeting today. But what I heard from you all yesterday is that you felt like you could use a little bit more time to look at these deals. And so, you know, I think you're hearing where we are, but we want to hear your recommendation. With that, I'll recognize you.
And just to be responsive to Commissioner Samuelin's question about the rents, we did provide information given to us from the TPC team for the market rate units as well as for the workforce housing units. So the market rate units would range from $4,200 to $18,000 per month, and the workforce units are currently ranging from $2,200 to about $2,400 per month, depending on the unit size. We don't have the square footages in the package, but we did have the number of the types of units that would be incorporated. So I just wanted to make that clear. Commissioner Richardson, we do appreciate the opportunity to have presented the term sheets as currently negotiated. We do consider the fact that we have the preliminary draft appraisal that just came in yesterday, and we would like an opportunity to meet with each team to better refine the deal points and come back to the Finance Committee as necessary as you may desire. We do think that we could achieve a lot more for the city if we had an opportunity to negotiate with the appraisal in mind.
Yeah. So I like both projects. I would like to see a little bit more work done on the projects. And again, for both teams, I'm looking at the appraised value of the property and the marginal revenue stream. That's really important to me. If we do nothing, we're going to keep our revenue stream on the parking. And so that's what I'm looking at. And, you know, I appreciate all the hard work that all of you have done on both teams. This didn't happen overnight. And also city staff. And with that, I'll yield to.
No, I'd like to speak. You seem to only look right. You might have a blind spot to the left. I'm doing this, so I just take the mic and get your attention. I will.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to get in for a while. But, I mean, being polite. You know, look, I don't want to see us burden these projects with demands for housing, because the initial effort was to try to get office space here, because, you know, 9 units is not going to solve our affordable housing crisis that we have here in Miami Beach and the county as a whole. So I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of, like, you know, just burdening these projects to create more housing, because it's just not going to move the needle enough. The real idea here is the office space. But colleagues, you know, if we want to talk about workforce housing, there are a lot of other solutions I'd like to challenge us to start thinking about, and I'll be bringing this up. You know, one is we have Parkview right across the street. You know, it's largely a single-family home market that is struggling now with the effects of sea level rise and climate change. You know, maybe through some thoughtful zoning changes, that can become a more of a multifamily district. A lot of folks in that neighborhood have challenged us to think about it. It would free up their value that's trapped in their homes if they could redevelop into multifamily. The other thing to start thinking about is, you know, we've got lots of budget hotels throughout the city. You know, might we start converting those hotels into rental apartments, and in return for getting them to convert, this is something we'd have to change in our city charter, but allow for FAR increases for conversions so that those properties can have the economics to do conversion. So if we want to be serious about workforce housing, we're going to have to be serious about changing our city charter and some zoning to create that, because we're just never going to be able to just develop our way out of this with our current zoning laws. So if we want to have more workforce housing, we're going to have to change our city charter to encourage more workforce housing development, okay? The other thing, you know, one thing I would ask for these developers, I'm curious on the retail that they're anticipating, because, frankly, I'd like to see more local businesses, mom and pops, and or, you know, high-end nationally recognized retail establishments coming, because I think what's happened to Lincoln Road, among other things, we pushed out a lot of mom and pops, and then they were just replaced by big box retailers that add nothing to the city. And so the uniqueness that was Lincoln Road 20 years ago quickly became, you know, Gaps and H&Ms and things like that. And it was no longer interesting for residents to go to, nor tourists. And so the whole thing died. And so this isn't something for the voters, but it is something for us to talk to you about, is what's the concept on the retail side so that we can create vibrancy and uniqueness to the district.
Absolutely, and I think you've made a number of good points there. I think the first one is that the affordable housing crisis is a product of artificial supply constraints first, and that the way to make housing more affordable is very clearly to build more housing. That's something that we're hoping to do by including 40-some-odd units of housing in our building. But certainly the policy initiatives that you put forward seem exceptionally compelling, and as representatives of the development community, we're excited about that. With respect to the retail plan, we're wholly aligned. We think that high-end boutique, both local and national retailers, add value to the project and create that measure of cultural vibrancy that we're looking for. We've included in our RFP response high-level letters of interest from boutique production facilities, from ultra-luxury restaurants, from unique and local eateries. And the goal is to create a confluence, a cacophony of different options so that our office workers, our residents, our tourists have high-end, sophisticated establishments to spend time in, right, and to spend their money, and to recreate that, I think, former glory that was at Lincoln Road, where it's unique, it's sophisticated, and I think very importantly, it's safe. And one of the things that residential coupled with office and retail create is eyes on the street. And that means people are going to be spending time outside on the sidewalks at all hours of the day. And that means that it's very, very challenging for crime, which thrives in darkness.
It's one thing to add to this is that as a company, we have a policy of helping small businesses start. We have a very large development in Charlotte, and our retail, about 40% of it is set aside for startups, new local businesses to start up. We're looking for a much more eclectic environment. I mean, we're not a fund, so we're not selling in 7-10 years. We are long-term investors here. biggest mistake I ever made was selling the Royal Palm Hotel. As a business person, the biggest mistake I ever did was selling the Royal Palm Hotel, which I thought was for a lot of money, and I tried to buy it back 10 years later for $100 million more and was overbid. So I learned that. So Miami Beach has got a bright future, so we're long-term holders. But we think that by having a mixed-use environment, you don't have to make all your money. And I think what happened with Lincoln Road is the prices kept running up, and in order to make money, they only had one product to sell, retail. We're going to be focused much more on local businesses and more eclectic businesses to give a unique experience to our customer base. And I do agree, that's what changed from Lincoln Road. I remember, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, it was a much more eclectic place, at an art center there and so forth, and then it became, a shopping mall. And I think that, we see the results of that. And I think there's an opportunity here, and I think our buildings will all do better. And I know they've got kind of a similar concept as well. So, but that's what we're going to focus on.
I think part of what happened too is South Beach became so popular that everybody wanted to be here, right? And all the mom and pop stores basically got priced out of the market because the rents went up so much. And then, as Commissioner Arriola, I just realized if we would move the podiums over here, I would turn my attention to you this way.
That's great.
Next time, I want you to sit here, and Commissioner, and then I'll turn
my
back.
I am happy
okay?
to go.
Let's put the podiums over here.
In
the middle. So, Commissioner Arriola, to your point on the workforce housing, do you think the team should look at this team should look at it at not or maybe converting those 9 units to just market rate apartments, or what did you have an opinion on that or a suggestion, or what do you think?
I don't have a firm opinion. Whatever makes the project work better, because the 9 units is not enough to move the needle.
Exactly.
I think they're going to be in super high demand regardless of the price. If you look at, I think there's only like 4 units on the top of 1111 Lincoln. They're gorgeous, and you can't even touch them. Regardless of how you price it, people will want to live in a Bjork Engels apartment off of Lincoln Road. I don't have a strong preference on that issue. But I do have a view on this is going to be one of the most exciting areas of the city in 5 years, and Lincoln Road will come back. It'll be a tough 5 years because there is going to be a lot of construction, but once it's done, it'll be generational. It's going to be an amazing place to live. I mean, I think we'll have all the vibrancy and better than Wynwood does. I think I've started thinking about the Parkview neighborhood and what we might be able to do there.
Right. So, go ahead.
Just real quick. I do think we need to give some thought to these uses as it relates to housing. And I agree, one project can't really move the needle. But one thing, in addition to all the good comments that folks have made, is, we don't have a crystal ball at what the world looks like in 5 years. And I'm very optimistic on Miami Beach real estate. I'm very optimistic on office. But could there be a scenario where it's less bullish than we thought? And if a project is exclusive, and that's the letter of a referendum question, have we, as a group, boxed ourselves in? Is there some merit, I think there is, to consider a more balanced approach that says we contemplate primarily this and some of that, and that we think about that. So I think that is really worth thinking about, and I think this conversation has sort of elevated. So I would be of the mind, actually for both teams, even though we said office, but we're all digesting and learning as we go. I think that's important. And I do want to make just one question came up with the other team I'd like to ask you, Mr. Peebles, about sources of funds, debt, equity, and how that would come about. Because it's one thing to get us deal, and then we got to build the thing.
Yes. Well, our partners and I have, committed our equity for the developer equity. It's all in place, all there. We have contacts and with debt, and have identified, I think, to the city a debt source. It's one of the larger funds in the world. And we have on the LP capital side interest and strong interest from a relationship that we have, which is one of the top 3 asset managers in the world. So we don't see that as any challenge on the on the financing side.
And I think to second that point, our objective is to run a robust competition between debt and equity sources who have tons of liquidity to put out and very few markets to put them in. Because of the narrative surrounding Miami Beach, there's untold competition to enter this market, and what we didn't want to do was do the project a disservice by identifying and committing ourselves to a single equity partner when we can drive down our cost of capital and deliver more of those benefits to the city.
Yeah, and actually, I want to mention one important thing. I mean, look, there's a robust private equity market out there. I mean, I'm sure that's Starwood's business. It's a robust private equity market. We're not concerned about that. However, I do believe that from our perspective, we're going to be longer-term owners, so it's more likely we have interest from public employee pension systems, that, for example, that we have relationships with, that are longer-term asset holders, and they have interest. A couple of them have an interest in this investment. Some of the prospective tenants that we've spoken to who are wealthy entrepreneurs also have an interest in putting capital in this project and in Miami Beach. And so what we're going to be looking for in our capital stack is a long-term hold. So you'll be dealing with us for a long time. And so we need a LP investor here that is going to be in for the long time so that we don't have to, as the fund runs its course, because these funds have a 7 to 10 year cycle, and they've got to, sell and move on more often than not. So we don't want to be in that situation. But we have no concern at all about the capital, and we've financed everything we've done here.
Good. Thank you. That's helpful.
Thanks. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring this back on the 29th to try to this committee to try to bring it in for a landing in terms of moving it back to the commission. And go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to, you made some comments on our project as well.
Sure.
So in the process. So just wanted to make a couple observations. So one, as we said, we completely leased our office building before we even opened the doors. So you were wondering about how much demand there is just for office. We are still getting phone calls because they know that we built our building and keep asking if we have any space. I mean, frankly, that's the reason that we were so interested in this project, because we know better than anyone how much pent-up demand there is of people who either just moved down here or want to move down here and don't have the quality office space that other submarkets and other markets have. So I can tell you there is plenty of demand, and our two projects combined is not enough. Two, you mentioned the idea of residential potentially being part of it. I just want to point out, from a pure economic perspective, if you ask us to add to exchange office for residential, it will end up in less rent payment that we can pay. So if we are looking at the economics here and that, I understand it's beyond just economics, but just understand that that will result in a lower number of what we're able to pay. Unfortunately, that's just the way the math works. So yeah. Just wanted to point that. And we also, sorry.
No, and I expected that. I mean, to a certain extent, if you look at the areas south of Lincoln Road, in many respects, that is workforce housing in terms of the component and so forth. And I believe that the private sector is going to step in and do a lot more with housing in the area. But I do think housing is a very important component for revitalization of Lincoln Road and having people there at nighttime and so forth. So with that, I want... John, we're going to bring this back. Raquel, I think. You know, Mr. Peoples, one of the things that would be helpful for me is the Integra team reached out and sat with me for about an hour and went over all the finances, and I would invite you, if you would like to do that, I would like to give you an hour of my time to go over all the finance and the revenue stream, because, there's a lot of information. You guys have spent months working on this, and we're doing it rather quickly, but I would invite you, if you want to do that, I would love to sit with you and do that.
We'd welcome the opportunity.
Absolutely. Okay, great.
And Mr. Chair, you do have one caller if you'd like to hear from the public.
Okay, we'll hear from the public. Go ahead.
All right. Mr. Roberts, you're up.
Thank you. I got to say, as a father and son team, I am very... The father must be very proud. The son is, eloquent and smart and brilliant, and congratulations on being a good father. The issue I have is, you know, the whole system is, you know, I blame the city, not these developers. This project, or the offering of these lots, the valuation is probably based on just the lot, not with the FAR added. I'm not sure, but I would assume. So even the appraisal, which is typically very, very low, is probably not, equal to the lot's potential, because the FAR is not included into the price of the appraisal, I would assume. It should be just sold. We could probably get, you know, way more money for the property than what we're talking about. And additionally, based on what I'm hearing, I don't think we get to tax the land, because we still own the land. So we lose tax revenue on that, whatever that number is. Let's say it's $100 million. We don't get that 2% county and city that we would normally get. The whole system is whacked. It's just whacked. You should put this to referendum. You could set the parameters for the property. It's going to be 30 towers, 30 stories, whatever it is, and put that to referendum for Class A office space, and then get the referendum, and then put it on market through commercial processes and sell the property. And if it requires a certain amount of public parking, you mean?
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Actually, the property taxes will be paid because it's a land lease, so there will be property taxes paid. So if we move forward, these items will be on the referendum because it will be required. So with that, gentlemen, I'm going to adjourn the meeting, and we will see everybody on the 29th. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good meeting.